You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
It's after 6 o'clock. Good morning, everybody. Up and alive and making it happen on the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Lines open for you here. The genuine Autoglass studio lines at 206-421-5757. Outside King County, 888-312-5757. This is Wednesday. Radio legend Mark Christopher, what does it mean when it's Wednesday?
I love this Wednesday kind of thing going on here. I get to play this music only once a week, everybody, and here's why.
The legendary song lyric contest of the week is upon us. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you the lyric to a famous song. See if you can place it. And when you hear that lyric later in the show, going in or out of commercial break, be the 10th caller, and you can win. Philip J. Vandenbort III, tell the people what they win.
Pretty good combo here. You get a brand new KVI t-shirt.
Limited edition.
Yeah, you could choose from a Commute with Carlson shirt.
Yes.
An Ari Hoffman shirt.
Yeah, you did
that
too.
Or a KVI logo shirt. That comes from...
Back the Blue shirt.
Yep. Oh, Back the Blue shirt. There we go. That comes from RogueNation1776.com. And then you also get a $50 gift card to the delicious, delectable Daniel's Broiler.
Very alliterative. Mm. Well stated, Philip J. Vandenbort III. So you want to hear what the lyric is? Here we go. I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. One more time. I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. Can you place that lyric?
Give me two more cups of coffee and I think I got it.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going through my 45s on vinyl over here and seeing if I can find it.
Yeah, I stumped Philip J. Vandenbort III. Anyway, see if you can play. Again, I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. All right. Seattle Mariners hosting the Yankees in town. Anthony Fauci snuck aboard the Yankees plane, so they went ahead and allowed him to throw out the first pitch at last night's game. You tell me, pro, negative, in between? Here's the reaction.
Wouldn't call that a warm welcome.
I didn't see anything on social media promoting it and getting ready to have some fun. Wait till you see this kind of thing. So.
I mean, you know, he spoke earlier at Fred Hutch, and of course, it was just a love-in. And obviously, you're not going to get any tough questions there. But when he went to throw out the first pitch, I'm going to call that, and I think I'm being generous of spirit here. A mixed reception. Okay? A mixed reception. One more time.
And you're right back!
Wait, hold on. We don't want to play that one yet. We want to play this one. Kid yelling. All right. I wish the media would have reported on his reception.
Yeah, at least as widely as they did his speech and whatever honor that he received at Fred Hutch.
It wasn't quite the love-in at the stadium that it was at the reception-conversation that he had over with the CEO at Fred Hutch. And, of course, we love the Hutch. We raise money for the Climb to Fight Breast Cancer every year. But, by the way, speaking of the Mariners, you know, this is one of the things, call it a burden, that I willfully shoulder. I can't really stay up much past 9:30, okay? I'd like to get to bed before 9. Yeah, I've got to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, finish the show. I do the first part of show prep in the early evening, and then I like to get to bed before 9, which means that when there's an extra inning Mariner game, I have to go to bed with the score tied, which is exactly what I had to do after the 8th inning last night.
No chance. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm glad I did, because the Mariners didn't win it in the 9th, and nobody won it in the 10th, and nobody won it in the 11th, and nobody won it in the 12th. But look what happened in the 13th inning.
And you're right, Ben! It is it! It is it! The Mariners win it! The first run is the only run in an instant classic! It's the game of the year!
1-0. Mariners prevail in 13 innings. Wow.
Couldn't beat a better team.
Wow.
Could be the game of the season. What a money's worth if you had a ticket, everybody.
My nephew was at that game. Oh, boy, lucky was he. But again, just one of the frustrations. I had to turn off the TV and call it a night at the end of the 8th inning because. But by the way, we're not a sports station, obviously. But there was another incident involving baseball that I thought was just wonderful. As you know, we have the girls team from Issaquah is competing for the Little League Girls Fast Pitch
World Series.
Softball championship, and the boys are playing the Little League World Series right now in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And during one of the games, pitcher was, you know, pitching, and, you know, these kids throw hard.
Yeah,
you know,
there's some pretty big 13-year-olds
They're throwing at 70-plus miles an hour. And threw and accidentally beamed the batter through the right off the top of his helmet, and the batter hit the dirt holding his head. And of course, when a little kid
gets hit in the head, out.
Everyone rushes out. Okay. All right. The pitcher is what, 12 years old, maybe 13?
Something like that, yeah. I think that's the age range.
This pitcher is completely freaked out at what he did. Okay, he's not Roger Clemens. Okay, he's having a tough time remaining composed. He's losing his composure, and he's rattled. And something happened that I've never seen happen in a game before, and I don't think anyone else has. Have a listen. This is Good Morning America.
An act of sportsmanship and compassion on the field at the Little League World Series regional playoffs. Oh, look out. Isaiah Jarvis in the batter's box when he's hit by a pitch in the head, falling to the ground in pain, coaches rushing to check on him.
That's awesome. It's awful good to see this young man come to his feet.
Jarvis getting up and heading to first base. But pitcher Caden Shelton still shaken.
I thought like he was really hurt, but like when he started walking up to me, I mean, it looked like he was better, but I thought he was going to throw a punch or something like that. But yeah, he hugged me, and it made me feel a lot better about myself at that moment.
So this is really cool. This is such great sportsmanship. He wants him to know that it's okay, that he'll be fine.
He hugged me, and he told me just throw strikes and take deep breaths.
I wanted to go up there, you know, because we were pretty good friends. So I went up there, I gave him a hug, you know. I mean, because we're all brothers. He'll be fine. Baseball is it's just a game.
The result of the game, entirely irrelevant, likely to be forgotten if ever noted again. Texas did win. They go to the Little League World Series. It's Isaiah Jarvis and Caden Shelton. That's who we will remember.
Yeah, they're going to remember that moment. Again, Isaiah gets beaned. It was an accident. And he goes to first, and the pitcher is shaken. And I mean, you can see him shaking. He was really rattled. And he walks up to him, and he hugs him. And he said, hey, it's okay. It's all right. It's all right. Just take deep breaths, and, you know, you're okay. Again, it was just a wonderful moment of sportsmanship.
You know, you just wonder, too, and it's just projection. You wonder if these two kids now somehow will just be friends for life. Somehow they both make the major leagues, and one day they meet again on the diamond, and everybody goes back to what happened in 2022 at the Little League World Series.
That would be a story. Yes.
Okay, go ahead and put the finishing touches on that screenplay.
Sounds like a Disney movie
or
something.
Let me know if they buy it. Anyway, you got 19 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show. Thank you, Uetta Lansky. Oh, wait, before I get to Uetta, we got to do the legendary song lyric again. I'm giving it out regularly. When you hear it, be the 10th caller. We're going to play it, a classic song going in or out of commercial break sometime this morning. Be the 10th caller, and you win a great prize pack. Here is your lyric. I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. Where have you heard that line before? Where have you heard that legendary song lyric?
On my shoulder, hold me in your...
Connected like a D.C. lobbyist, it's time for the Social Media Sweep on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
That you love me too. Put your lips next to mine.
25 minutes after 6 o'clock. Now, normally we play hits from the 60s during the 6 o'clock hour, going in or out of commercial break. Are we flirting with the late 50s here, radio legend Mark Christopher?
Doing a little 59ers because there was a lack of song lists to play to keep things rolling, you know, for the library. Nice. So, yeah, we're going to drift some of the 59ers
into
the 60s.
That's a good ear to pick up that wasn't from 1960 or later.
That's Paul Anka when he
was music.
10 years old, I believe. You know.
he was 15. He was 15 years old when he sang the song.
Yeah.
All right, Philip J. Vandenberg III. No one cares about that. What they care about is what's going on in the social media world.
Yeah, we're
going
to start off with some hard news here, and then we're going to get back to the reaction to Dr. Anthony Fauci throwing out this first pitch at the Seattle Mariners game last night from KVI's own Ari Hoffman. So the hard news story that we need to talk about is a little on the unusual side, but it involves a suspected serial killer in New Mexico that had been, and the victims in the serial killing were all Muslim people.
And what were we hearing?
And a couple of days ago,
hearing?
The news media reports were New Mexico authorities investigating potential serial killer in New Mexico.
Could be hate
targeting,
crime.
Yes, targeting Muslims, and it could potentially be anti-Muslim hate. I'm looking at a Reuters.com story about this, and it says a Muslim immigrant from Afghanistan has now been arrested as the prime suspect in the serial killings of four Muslim men that rattled the Islamic community of New Mexico's largest city, Albuquerque.
So the man they say is responsible for these anti-Muslim hate crimes is 51-year-old Mohammed Syed.
Yes. And the Reuters story I'm looking at says authorities said the killings may have been rooted in a personal grudge, possibly with intra-Muslim sectarian overtones. And then the Reuters story never gets into this part, but essentially the dispute between Sunni and Shia Muslims,
right,
in that 7th century split from 14 centuries ago about who's the rightful heir of Islam, who's the, yes, rightful leader of Islam.
This is one of those things in foreign policy you want to stay out of, is this whole Sunni-Shia, yeah, dispute. The Saudis are Sunni.
Sunni is an example.
The Iranians, Iran, are Shiites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just one more entanglement we don't need in the Middle East. But anyway, this guy's daughter, this suspected murderer's daughter, married a Shiite Muslim. And he apparently was holding these men responsible for helping to make that happen?
Yes, yes. So
he started shooting and killing Shiite Muslim men.
Yeah. We're out of time here, but Ari Hoffman was at the Seattle Mariners game last night with the Anthony Fauci first pitch.
Oh, we got to play this.
He has a couple of comments, and then what he posted on social media, I'm guessing probably KVI listeners. Yeah. Had some zingers as well, so we'll get to that next hour.
Ari, isn't it nice to do an afternoon show so we can stay up and watch a 13-inning game? Ari?
Job benefits.
Let's get to a 6:30.
It's late. We gotta get on home. It's late. We've been gone too long.
Turning up the overnight heat from the right side of the aisle. Red Eye Radio. Weeknights, 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. KVI. KVI.com.
We gotta get home fast.
All right. Now, Philip J. Vandenbort III, you wanted to finish up there with a thought as time ran short.
Yeah, we could go through Ari's comment about the
afternoon
first pitch with the Mariners game last night.
We started off the show playing. The media are really soft-pedaling this. But after, a hugs and kisses love-in at the Hutch, where Fauci spoke, he went to throw out the first pitch at the Mariners game last night. And here was the response. All right. Okay.
And that was something Ari posted on his social media, so I think one of those booing voices
was probably,
I'm guessing, is Ari.
Sounded, yeah, like Ari.
But if you play the actual, again, there,
yeah, we
was
had
cheering.
A different one you played earlier.
Well, I played the stadium itself, yeah, not
the
one.
It was kind of that
group.
Sound, yeah. It was. I think I hear Ari in the background right there.
Very mixed reception for Anthony Fauci at the Mariner game, where he got to throw out the first pitch.
So Ari posted his video of that and added, hey, at least Fauci has worked on his pitching since the last time. And that was what jumped out at me, because I had seen this last night and thought, why would anyone ask Fauci to throw out another first pitch? He did this a year or so ago
at the
Nationals game,
D.C.,
and he threw it into the grass. I mean, I don't even think it got 15, 25 feet away from him.
No,
so.
it was one of those, oh, geez.
A big oopsie.
All right. Let's get the game going.
Yeah, and then one other person added this comment about Fauci and the first pitch. Fauci claims, his claim to pitches is that he can throw curveballs out two sides of his face.
Uh-oh. Oh.
And for an encore, he can deliver some of the wildest pitches in American history. So that was somebody else's zinger after what Ari posted last night.
So back to politics here. Yesterday, Jamie Herrera Butler, after we got off the air yesterday afternoon, Jamie Herrera Butler has now conceded defeat to Joe Kent, her Republican challenger in the primary endorsed by Donald Trump. New vote totals indicate that Jamie is going to finish just behind Joe. She'll probably lose by about 900 to 1,000 votes. She had been ahead by 4,800 votes over Joe Kent last Tuesday, and then Joe Kent had a huge number of votes come in for him over the weekend. And, you know, she made, you know, very gracious statement, quote, "Ever since I was first elected to this seat, I've done my very best to serve my home region and our country. Though my campaign came up short this time, I am proud of all we've accomplished together for the place where I was raised and still called home." She did not mention Joe Kent in her statement. I hope she will endorse and campaign for him. Because while Jamie would very much have liked to have received another term in Congress, I know she wants to leave behind a Republican majority, right? And this seat could go either way. The 3rd District is very iffy. You know, it's gone both ways. You had left-wing Democrat Jolene Unsold, who held it for several years in the late 80s and early 90s. And then she was defeated by Linda Smith, who actually won her primary with a write-in campaign. State Senator Linda Smith, in many ways, harkened back to Donald Trump-type populism. And then, after serving only 2 terms, Linda decided to run for the Senate. Not a good career move. Wasn't a Republican year at the polls. And the Democrat won her seat in Congress. That was Brian Baird. We've had Brian on the show several times. Brian is more of a moderately liberal Democrat, supported the Iraq War. And then when Brian was eventually replaced by Jamie Herrera Butler. So this seat has gone both ways. And the Democrat in the contest is Maria Glusenkamp Perez. She owns an auto shop. But listen to her campaign. Okay? Quote, "This evening, Washington 3rd Congressional District candidate, this is Maria Glusenkamp's statement after Joe Kent pulled ahead of Jamie Herrera Butler. Quote, "White nationalist and extremist Joe Kent has now pulled ahead of incumbent Jamie Herrera Butler in the late vote counts. It appears he will be our opponent in November. This means that our race in November is going to be a national bellwether for the direction of the country. Do we want to double down on the hyper-partisan extremism, the falsehoods and conspiracy theories, the attacks on our democracy and our elections, the divisiveness and dysfunction that is paralyzing the other Washington and tearing our country apart? Because that's what Joe Kent represents. Or we can come together to demand positive change, find common ground, and elect a representative focused on solving problems and building a better future." So who is his opponent? You can tell that this is just going to be a brutal, ornery, strident campaign that is all anti-Joe Kent, that Marie Perez is going to be running against him. Who is she? Well, she went to Reed College in Oregon. Reed College is the Evergreen State College of Oregon. And then she opened a auto repair shop, got a government loan, and brags that the shop now has expanded to 6 bays. And she is a what you would call a progressive activist. So if this seat is lost, basically the squad gets a new member. You will have a Seattle-like left-wing activist as your third district member of Congress. And, I mean, here, Joe Kent, we've had Joe on the show. And, you know, Joe was saying great stuff about Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz. And I said, you know, Joe, given your background here, distinguished, decorated veteran, a Gold Star husband, your wife also served in the military and was killed by ISIS in Syria. For heaven's sakes, you know, you should model yourself after someone like Dan Crenshaw or Tom Cotton. But, you know, Joe is very young. He's very energetic. He's positively America first and pro-Trump. And he needs to understand that you definitely want to get the Trump people on board, but you also need a majority. So you need to start building out for your majority. And your opponent is going to throw every slur she can at you. So my reaction to the first words out of the mouth of Marie Perez were, quote, white nationalist and extremist Joe Kent has pulled ahead of Jamie Herrera Butler. He will be our opponent. Do you want to know where you can give a donation to Joe Kent? Because I do. Just go to JoeKentForCongress.com. That's JoeKentForCongress.com. Because he's going to need it. I guarantee you the left is going to throw so much money, not just because Joe Kent is unapologetically pro-Trump, but because Marie Glusenkamp Perez is a hard left Democrat, has been for years. So, Joe Kent for Congress for more information, and you can make a donation to his campaign. We will invite both of them to join me on the show between now and November, but that's what's at stake. All right? Let us quickly give you the legendary song lyric of the day. Again, our contest, when you hear this lyric, and you will, sometime between now and 8:30, be the 10th caller, and you can win a KVI t-shirt, a Commute with Carlson t-shirt, and a $50 gift card to Daniel's Broiler. The legendary lyric is, I can see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess.
Hey, hey, mercy woman plays a song and no one listens. I need help, I'm falling again.
Coverage beyond the tweets. Talk Play Radio 570 KVI.
Tell me I can live louder if I...
Back we are, 7 to 7, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Here's our buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host this morning on the Commute with Carlson. Good morning, Lars Larson.
Good morning, John. Can you imagine the great news that out of 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump for the fake charges involving the incident on January 6th, I think two are left. Dan Newhouse is still around.
Yes.
And, of course, Liz Cheney is going to get her Waterloo on Tuesday the 16th, as they have the primary in Wyoming. And I think we're about to see a member of Congress get one of the lowest vote totals or vote percentages when she hits that, because I don't think Wyoming can stand Liz Cheney. I think they're going to boot her out and boot her out hard. And as of last night, Jamie Herrera Butler, now soon to be former member of Congress, although she keeps her job till January,
yes.
My my member of Congress, because I live in the 3rd District, has been beaten by Joe Kent.
Well, she's conceded.
By Donald Trump.
She's conceded. The race. The first words out of the mouth of Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, the Democrat,
yep.
Who will also advance to the November ballot, was, quote, white nationalist and extremist
Joe
Kent has now pulled ahead of Jamie Herrera Butler. It appears he will be our opponent. Do we want to double down on hyper-partisan extremism, falsehoods, and conspiracy theories? Again, that's the tone of the campaign of Joe Kent's opponent in November.
Yeah, and that's probably the campaign it's going to be. So you had the GOP establishment and Kevin McCarthy try to knock Joe Kent out on behalf of Jamie Herrera Butler. You had Heidi St. John, who claimed to be the conservative running, try to knock him out with lies and falsehoods. And now you're going to have the Democrat try to knock him out. It's almost like he's facing the same kind of opposition at a congressional level that Trump faced at the national level, that they're going to say every bad thing about you they possibly can. And I have no doubt he'll be the next member of Congress come January.
It's going to be a tough one. You know, the 3rd District could go either way. That's why everybody needs to roll up their sleeves and get active. Let's get to your second news headlines in hour number two of the commute.
You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
707, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you ever so much for letting me be part of your listening day. Time for the second hour of the radio program of record with the Genuine Autoglass studio lines open for you here. 206-421-5757 outside King County, 888-312-5757. We'll keep it. We'll open up this hour local, and then I'll be talking about the update on the raid on Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago. And I told you what I suspected was afoot, and it appears I'm not alone. Again, at 7:35, an update on that. But I want to start local here. This is a very interesting story about, again, this is how passive our police now are. Deputies respond to a call in Burien. There was a vehicle running. Two people in the front seat, not moving. Are they dead? Are they unconscious? Are they sleeping? Deputies swing by, tap on the glass, and the driver stirs, opens his eyes, wakes up, sees the police, turns the key, and drives away. The deputies did not pursue them because they didn't have a crime for which they had probable cause to pursue them for. Less than one block later, the car rolls over an embankment and catches fire. That's just the start of this story. The deputies, of course, run down to the bottom of the embankment to try and get the driver and passenger out. The driver does get out. No wonder he drove away. He's got outstanding warrants. Refused to cooperate with deputies. The female managed to get out, and she got away. Deputies haven't found her. Denise Whitaker from Como 4 spoke to two neighbors who noticed the car with the two people inside, who, again, were either sleeping or they had just passed out. Again, the car was running.
Couldn't see the flames, but there was a lot of smoke coming up, a lot of dark smoke, and I was hoping it wasn't one of our neighbors' houses.
The smoke Michelle Porterfield saw came from this car, reported stolen 1 week ago, now crashed into a neighbor's garage down a steep embankment.
I was really scared.
Erica is the one who first called 911 this morning after her dog alerted her to a car in the driveway, engine running, with a man and a woman inside, who she says appeared to be sleeping or passed out.
I didn't know who they were or why they were here, and then to see all of that go down, it was really scary.
Deputies tried waking the couple, and when the man behind the wheel woke up, Captain Todd Morrell tells me the driver intentionally rammed a patrol car trying to get away. He also tells me deputies standing outside their vehicles had to run to avoid getting hit.
But he accelerated away and fell into the ditch next to the next door's garage, and the accelerator got stuck down, and so it started a fire.
Erica tells us deputies used fire extinguishers while also trying to get the man and woman out of the car. The smoke so great, four of those deputies suffered smoke inhalation.
I'm just glad that nothing else happened, that they hit a garage instead of a house.
Turns out the driver of the car has an outstanding felony warrant for escaping community custody on a charge of unlawful possession of a firearm. I asked King County Sheriff's Captain Morrell if they found any weapons in the car. So far, he told me none had been found. He did tell me deputies also spotted drug paraphernalia in the car. Medics took that driver to the hospital. It's unknown yet if doctors ordered a toxicology panel.
Gee, I wouldn't have known about any of these things. This is so predictable. By the way, deputies had to dodge this guy. This guy drove his car at deputies. They had to jump out of the way, and he rammed a police car, and they didn't pursue him? As far as I'm concerned, when you drive your car at another person, that is assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
You should be able to open up and fire on that vehicle.
And here's what's so strange.
Let alone pursue them. What do you mean they didn't pursue him?
Yeah.
He drove his car at them.
Basically, Seattle politicians, King County politicians, the Washington legislature with Democrats in control and Governor Inslee, they basically rolled back all of these enforcement crimes. The King County Prosecutor's Office certainly doesn't really enforce drug crimes. So what was this driver thinking, that the driver behind the wheel was awoken by ostensibly a deputy knocking at the window?
A welfare check.
Yeah. That
your car's running. No one's moving. Are you okay?
Roll down the window. What's up, man? And just saying, I'm just sitting here in this car. But yes, the impulse of the driver is, oh, I'm busted. I'm speeding away, endangering everybody else.
Yeah.
And this is the climate that Seattle politicians, King County politicians, Washington legislature has created.
No. It's more than that. This is the climate that criminals now operate in and think, I can drive at these deputies. They're not going to pull their weapons and fire.
Yeah, okay.
I can ram that police car. They're not going to pursue me.
Not going to chase.
Isn't it a crime to ram a police car?
Last I checked.
It would seem to me that if you have a dented police car and witnesses who see the driver ramming your police car, that's probable cause for a crime. What do you mean they're not pursuing these guys? This is, again, I don't blame the cops, understand. This is the anti-police reforms. They had the votes to change this ridiculous anti-police pursuit policy. And state senators like Manka Dingra over in the Radical in the 45th District of Kirkland, Redmond, refused to allow her caucus to vote it out. And so that's why it's still the law. These people are so contemptible. It's unbelievable. The legislators who enable them are as bad as the criminals themselves. That's why we need a house cleaning in November. Okay, by the way, last week we brought you the story about the eco blocks. Okay, the eco blocks are these 2,000-pound cement blocks that are magically appearing in places where these dilapidated running drug dens, these RVs, like to travel in caravans and park along the side of the road, and they bring misery, mayhem, and crime to wherever they go. That's as night follows day. Whenever you have these illegal tent encampments or RV encampments, this is what follows. Well, now, this concept is moving to the sidewalk. North Seattle residents are tired of homeless drug vagrants camping on their sidewalks. So now, all of a sudden, large planter boxes are now appearing where the tents used to be. In this area, North Aurora Avenue, it's up near where Jonathan Cho joined us last week to talk about the problems of the homeless tents and how aggressive and defiant they were. And after the tents were recently cleared, neighbors said, don't give them a chance to come back and put their tents back up. So all of a sudden, these planter boxes are now appearing.
We all decided that the best thing that we could do is plant like mature bushes and gardens to just act as a kind of like a green deterrent for people to coming back.
I call them eco planters.
The idea is catching on in other neighborhoods where planting strips have been overtaken by tents and then cleared. This street on Capitol Hill had similar problems with homeless campers.
But that would be a good idea to let people have a little garden.
I think it would keep them out of it. I really do.
Other deterrents are being tried, including controversial concrete blocks. But even the gardening advocates say it shouldn't be the neighbors providing all the solutions.
Like, the city needs to do its part to help keep public safety for everybody.
Setting up a garden like this is not cheap. The neighborhood has already spent thousands of dollars on water, and it requires ongoing care and maintenance just for a little peace of mind.
And they are parting with that money so they can have a little peace of mind. Again, because the city, you don't think the city could have put these planters up there? Boy, they certainly have the money to put in these parklets to keep people from parking cars where they used to be able to park. These parklets are funded by the city. Why aren't these planters being funded by the city? Sounds like neighborhood beautification to me.
Connected like a DC lobbyist, it's time for the social media sweep on the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
No, that's not the legendary song lyric of the day. Paul McCartney. So we'll see if we hear it soon. Again, that legendary lyric is, I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. Be the 10th caller when you hear that. But right now you get to listen to Philip J. Vandervoort III tell us what's going on in the social media world.
At the beginning of the week, you spent a fair amount of time talking about the Inflation Reduction Act that Senate Democrats passed. The House Democrats expected to pass it next week. I've got an Inflation Reduction Act factoid that you might not know about, John. And I came across this at a website and a social media handle I like to follow, a car news website called carbuzz.com.
Okay.
So as it currently stands with this Inflation Reduction Act, you know, a big part of it was tax breaks to buy electric vehicles, EVs. According to CarBuzz, as it currently stands, there isn't a single EV manufacturer selling EVs in the U.S. that meets the demands that are set out in the Inflation Reduction Act to source EV batteries that don't come from China. So I guess silver lining here is they're trying to create EVs that don't rely on EV batteries that come from China. So I don't know if that means they'll be able to, quote unquote, kind of make them made in American or have supplies from America that would be produced as EV vehicles, you know, electric vehicles here in the States. So the new bill ends up giving these tax credits that you get at the point of purchase rather than waiting until you have to pay your taxes on April 15th.
Aren't most people who buy electric vehicles fairly wealthy?
Probably so.
You know, yes, no, that's not probably. We got the data.
Yeah.
Definitely so.
Yeah.
And a tax credit is not, you know, the same as a deduction. A deduction is a reduction in your taxable income.
Okay.
A tax credit is money you get to take off your tax bill, off your bill. So this is a tax giveaway to disproportionately wealthy people.
Yes, there is that. So CarBuzz says that the new rules in the Inflation Reduction Act are more strict and aimed at getting U.S. manufacturers less reliant on Chinese-built batteries. And they write, this is the main reason Ford, Toyota, and GM oppose the new bill, as they rely heavily on China to supply these batteries. Now, there is a sidebar that also happened yesterday when Ford just announced price hikes on its two EV versions of the Ford F-150 Lightning truck.
Yeah.
And they're going to increase the prices on their EV Ford F-150 Lightning trucks by about the same amount that the tax credits are worth. So that might explain why the EV makers are going to now increase the price of the truck if they have to pay more money for all the materials and avoid reliance on Chinese-built batteries.
So components of the Inflation Reduction Act actually promote inflationary pricing.
Looking at what Ford announced just a couple of days after the Inflation Reduction Act passed, yes, it would seem so. So two steps forward, one step back.
When we come back, the war between Texas and New York over illegal immigration is getting comical. We'll tell you why.
I can see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better.
Feisty, fearless, she's an Emmy-winning journalist telling all sides of the story. The Rita Cosby Show, weeknights 9 to 11, KVI.
If I find you've been creeping around my back stairs.
7:37, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. Let's update the story we and everybody else was talking about yesterday, and that is the unprecedented, stunning, abusive FBI raid on President Trump's home at the Mar-a-Lago Resort and compound. I said that I didn't believe that this had anything to do with a dispute over documents. I mean, think about this. We're having a dispute over whether certain documents are classified and need to be returned to the National Archives or whether they belong to the president. Can you please send down 30 FBI agents to conduct a day-long raid on the president's compound so we can get those documents? Really? No. Andrew McCarthy, who used to be a federal prosecutor and now, of course, writes for National Review. We've had him on the show several times. Has it just right. He says, there's a game that prosecutors play. Let's say I suspect someone, a suspect, committed an armed robbery. I suspect he committed an armed robbery, but I know that he deals drugs. So I write a search warrant application laying out my probable cause case that he's been selling small amounts of drugs from his apartment. I don't say a word about the warrant in the robbery, about the robbery rather, is I don't have to, because The agents are authorized to search the whole apartment, and if they find culpability of a crime, like, say, robbery tools, a gun, a mask, etc., the law allows them to seize those weapons. As long as they're conducting a legitimate search, they are authorized to seize any, obviously, incriminating evidence they come across involving criminal conduct. So even though the warrant was supposedly about drugs, the prosecutors can use the evidence that they seized to charge armed robbery. He says that's what Andy McCarthy thinks is going on with Mar-a-Lago, as did I. I said this to you yesterday. The ostensible justification for the search is the president's potentially unlawful retention of government records and the mishandling of classified information. The real reason, Andrew McCarthy says, is the Capitol riot on January 6th. Here's the bottom line. The Justice Department, the Democrats, the Biden administration, they want to try Donald Trump for a crime, for a felony. They want to charge him for the riot. They don't have proof that he's criminally responsible for the violence that broke out at the Capitol. They've tried, again, the same people who tried to charge Russia collusion are trying to say that the riot, the break-in of the Capitol, that was all a plot of Donald Trump. They don't have any proof of this. They've gotten emails. They've been following social media. Do we have any communication between any of the rioters and anyone at the White House? No. Any kind of, you know, back channel communication? No. So they want to look for more information. Maybe they just haven't looked hard enough. So that's why this raid happened. And if they can happen to come across any information that does tie Donald Trump to the January 6th rioters, then they can say, oh, yeah, well, never mind that dispute over the documents. We'll let the lawyers hash that out. We can always issue a subpoena for that later. But we've got this email. We've got this text. We've got this note that definitely ties President Trump to the rioters and the rioting behavior they engaged in. That's what's going on here, says Andrew McCarthy, and that's what I suspect is correct. If the Capitol riot had not happened, he writes, there would have been no thought of indicting Donald Trump over the futile, half-baked Stop the Steal scheme. But because of the riot, the scheme becomes more condemnable. But politically condemning it is one thing. What they want to do is legally tie Trump to the rioting itself. So they were willing to unleash what the Wall Street Journal calls political furies the Justice Department can't control and may not understand, just to see, just to fish, get enough documents where they could sift through and see, is there any evidence that ties Trump to January 6th? That's what you need to know about this. That's what makes it all comprehensible, if not reprehensible. Okay? If they thought they had probable cause for Donald Trump having anything to do with the riots, with the rioting, or the rioters, or conspiring to have them do what they did, they would have come out with it. They would have charged him. Or at the very least, they would have leaked it to friendly media. And of course, 95% of the media is anti-Trump. So 95% of the media, when it comes to this, are friendly media. But the burden of proof for indicting a former president is very high. So they don't have what this raid shows is they don't have the evidence they want to find, that they need to find, to try to indict Trump for a criminal offense. So in an odd kind of way, this raid at Mar-a-Lago reinforces that the January 6th committee is kaput. That what they were hoping at the end of the process, at the end of the tunnel, a blinding light of, you know, breakthrough information resulting in the indictment of Donald Trump and the end of his political career and the splitting apart of the Republican Party, that would all happen. Only they don't have that information. So they said, keep looking. Well, we don't have any place to look. They, you know, we'd have to raid Donald Trump's home to look through his personal effects, to break into his safe, to cart away box after box of materials. If we want to find that evidence, it might not even be there when we do. They said, all right, do we have a predicate? Well, no, I mean, other than this document dispute that Trump's having with National Archives. Okay, sounds good. That's all we need. That's why this happened. You talk about abusive. That's what's going on here. And again, what it shows, not only is a thoroughly politicized Justice Department, but, you know, even more ugly, what has happened to the FBI? You know, I used to revere the FBI growing up. There was a television show, very popular in the 60s and 70s, called The FBI. It starred Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. J. Edgar Hoover used to approve the scripts. You took a personal interest in the show. Every week polished the image and enhanced the esteem of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. My mom, as a very young woman in Washington, D.C., worked for the FBI. And she was, I think, like Secretary of the Month once, and got her picture taken, autographed picture with J. Edgar Hoover. You know, so, I mean, I have always had high admiration for the FBI. They are so thoroughly politicized, thanks to James Comey, thanks to people like Peter Strzok, Agent Peter Strzok.
John, the recent trip I took to D.C., first time there, that was on my list, J. Edgar Hoover Building. I'm right in front of it thinking, get a picture, like you. Always respected the FBI, loved that show of the FBI there in the 60s and 70s. But it's all fenced off. The big stones, big bricks we have on our streets right now for the RVs, they're all in front of the door. You can have no access. In fact, I put it on a tweet this morning promoting your show. Like, why is it so closed off where you can't even go in and just say thanks for what you do? Oh, wow. But you can't even get in the lobby.
So anyway, again, the further politicization, or as you're hearing, the weaponization. You start weaponizing the cops for political purposes, for, you know, for abject political purposes, this gets ugly. And things right now are really ugly, especially when the president you're going after, the former president you're going after, could well be the opponent for the president whose administration is carrying out the raid. But now you know why. This is what's going on. This is why this outrageous behavior is taking place. It's coming up here on 749, the John Carlson Show. Congratulations, KVI listener Stan from Bothell, who heard the song and the lyric from Gordon Lightfoot, his hit song Sundown. I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. Even the radio legend Mark Christopher was momentarily stymied by that lyric.
I do better when you sing the lyric. When you just read it like a story or a John Carlson headline, there's no way.
People may like to hear me talk. Absolutely nobody likes to hear me sing. So we don't do that.
Where the red, white, and blue rules. Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Back we are, the John Carlson Show. Again, when you win the legendary lyric song contest, like our friend Stan this morning, you win a KVI limited edition t-shirt from our friends at RogueNation1776.com. Great shirts, by the way, RogueNation1776.com, your choice of several. And you also win a $50 gift card to Delectable Delicious Daniel's Broiler. So check them out, and congratulations to our friends Stan and Bothell. All right, when we come back, a great interview our friend Ari Hoffman in the afternoon had with congressional primary winner Joe Kent. You're about to hear it. First, let's get to your headlines.
Hey, it's John. You found it. The best place for live, local, conservative talk in the morning. The Commute with Carlson. Stimulating, entertaining, and making a difference. Here's John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, right where you need to be. Gonna start out a national and then pivot to our good buddy Ari Hoffman. Had a wonderful interview with Joe Kent. Gonna run part of that here for you as well. But are you following this back and forth between the mayor of New York City and the governor of Texas? The governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, along with Governor Ducey in Arizona, are starting to bus illegal immigrants from their states across the country to Washington, D.C. and to New York City. Now, how come? Well, it's not just because the mayors of these two cities have been in favor of the border policies that are resulting in record numbers of illegal immigrants streaming across the border. It's also because both of these mayors not only are running sanctuary cities, but they've been preening themselves on how open and tolerant and accepting they are of illegals. That, in fact, migrants are our strength. Immigrants are our strength. It doesn't matter if you're documented. So I said, good, because we're having trouble here. So they've been busing thousands of them across the country. And Eric Adams doesn't like it. Quote, this is horrific when you think about what Governor Abbott is doing. New York is a city that has always represented democratic values, showing our values. That's what we're doing here today. in greeting these illegals. It's unimaginable what the governor of Texas has done. When you think about this country, a country that has always been open to those fleeing persecution and other intolerable conditions. We've always welcomed that, close quote. No, we haven't. Because just about every country pales in comparison to the United States when it comes to political stability, and particularly when it comes to intolerable living conditions. The living, the wages, are much better here in the States than they are for most people, particularly those of limited education in other countries. So the governor of Texas responded back, what's horrific is the thousands of illegal immigrants overrunning and overwhelming our border communities with populations smaller than a New York City borough. And Mayor Adams is hypocritically upset about welcoming a few dozen into his sanctuary city. These migrants willingly chose to go to New York City, having signed a voluntary consent waiver, available in multiple languages, upon boarding, that they agreed on the destination. If the mayor wants a solution, call President Biden to take immediate action to secure the border. So now the mayor of New York is responding to that by threatening to send New Yorkers to Texas on buses. Now, if I'm the governor of Texas, I'm going to say, you don't need to. There's New Yorkers moving to Texas all the time. There are New Yorkers who are fleeing your state and are coming to the Lone Star State. We see them every day. So you don't need to send New Yorkers to Texas on a bus. They're already coming here. And then Mayor Adams says, well, I'm deeply contemplating, this is a quote, I'm deeply contemplating taking a busload of New Yorkers to Texas and do some good old-fashioned door knocking, because we have to, for the good of America, we have to get Abbott out of office, close quote. Oh, man, what a gift. Governor Abbott is running for re-election this November, and the mayor of New York City just said that we need to get him out of office? Man, the governor of Texas should be running that soundbite every day until November. Wow. What a gift. What a gift. And, you know, my policy is, I think the governors of New York and Arizona should be sending illegals to every sanctuary city in America. All right. Speaking of federal policy, immigration policy, in the state of Washington, we've had one result flip. That result was Jamie Herrera Butler, veteran congresswoman from the 3rd District, which borders the state of Oregon, was 4,800 votes ahead. Then, as I mentioned to you, she fell to just 257 votes ahead. And yesterday she went behind Joe Kent. Joe Kent actually pulled in front of Jamie, and yesterday he now has a 923 vote lead. There aren't many votes left to count. Jamie Herrera Butler has conceded the race to Joe Kent. Ari Hoffman talked to him yesterday.
You know, I mean, we do elections, you know, a whole month here in Washington State, so I think that's some of it. But I think we had a record turnout. From what I'm hearing from folks that have watched elections closely down here for years, they're saying that they think this primary exceeded the participation for the 2020 presidential election, which is pretty crazy. But also because of all the issues with the 2020 election, we had a lot of our people, a lot of Republicans, a lot of America First types that held on to their ballots until the last day. And so we really overwhelmed the system with folks either hand-delivering them to the county auditor's office or just putting them in the drop box at the last minute. So I think that's why it's taking a little bit longer for the results to come in.
So, Joe, let me ask you this, because you and I agree on a lot of things, and we disagree on a few things. My contention has always been that so much of the things we think of as voter fraud have been legalized in Washington State, and that now it's hard to call them fraud, even though you and I may call them unethical. You and I may think of them as fraud. They're now legal. Do you think that this disproves the theory that there's actually fraud and that our system is secure?
No, not at all. I mean, I think if anything, I'm not saying there's anything going on, any kind of malfeasance going on right now in our election. But the fact that we mail out ballots on, you know, July 15th and we're still here on August 9th trying to tally the vote, I just think that there's so many holes in the way that we vote. It's not a transparent process. It doesn't inspire a ton of faith in those of us that are casting our votes. So I think going back to in-person voting really just solves a lot of these issues.
I agree. I mean, look at France. They have a population of, what, 47 million, got their elections done in one night. We have 7 million people in Washington State. About 1.5 million of them are actually registered to vote. And out of that number, I think, what, almost 38% maybe showed up to vote. In your race, it's a whole different number. And yet, we still can't get those votes counted on time. It's absolutely insane. Joe, is there something you could do at the congressional level to maybe do some kind of national voting thing? Or we can't really do that with the state process, can we now? However, can we do it for a presidential election?
You know, I still want the states, obviously, to be in control of, you know, the time, place, and manner of how elections are conducted. But I really want to lay out all the fraud that took place in 2020 to show the American people just how wrought with fraud mail-out ballots can be. And then especially, like you said, a lot of the things that we would consider to be fraud are legalized here in Washington State. I tell people all the time, hey, if you watch 2,000 Mules, the crazy thing about 2,000 Mules is the vast majority of those types of practices are actually legal in Washington State when you're talking about ballot harvesting, dropping off lots of ballots especially. So I think showing the people what happened and all the different powers that were in play, the different funding streams that were in play there, would really help give the people the knowledge they need to demand changes at the legislative level in the states so that we can actually get back to voting in person. I think a national standard for voter ID is something we should really work towards in Congress from the federal perspective, having an identification card that indicates whether or not you're a U.S. citizen and an eligible voter, I think would help the states have a fair process.
So, Joe, how are you going to reach out to the voters that may have voted for your Republican opponent and get them on board your side? I mean, if you can do that, you're going to run the table in the general election. How do you plan to bridge the divide between the people who are more the Jamie Herrera Butler types and the people who are more the Joe Kent types?
Yeah, you know, we had a really hard-fought primary, and if you look at the numbers, this is clearly a very conservative, very Republican district. The folks that voted for Jamie are one of the other Republican candidates. So really, I think a hard-fought primary gives us this opportunity to really have steel sharpened steel. And so now we know that we are up against the far left, which has the full control of big tech. They have the full control of the federal government. They're raiding a duly elected president's or former president's house, weaponizing the national security state against the American people. We know what we're up against. So I want to be able to reach out to everyone in the Republican Party and say, hey, we have to get unified. If we're going to save the Republic, the nuances of policy difference, and even some of them can be beyond nuances. They can be big. But let's have those discussions. But at the end of the day, we must unify because you know what? The enemy, the progressive left, the cultural Marxists, they are 100% unified and marching in lockstep, and they are not playing around. We have to get serious and treat this like the war that it is.
Aside from how insane it was that the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago yesterday, and we still don't even really understand the reasons why. I mean, for all we know, it's so some researcher at the National Archives can have something he's writing a book about in these documents. We don't really know. But what got missed yesterday with all this news was it's been a year since the disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal. It doesn't seem like any reports coming. Anybody's actually doing any investigation into that. What are your thoughts?
No, it's a disgrace. No one's been held accountable whatsoever. I mean, we literally left a 20-year war in a complete and total disaster. We lost 13 Americans on the way out. We left Americans on the battlefield who were left to fend for themselves, and no one's been held accountable. I mean, we still have the exact same chain of command at the Pentagon. Obviously, the commander-in-chief's still intact. His whole national security team, they're all still there. They're pretending like nothing happened. They immediately found a new conflict for us to get deeply involved in Ukraine, and we're seeing how that's all playing out. So we need to have accountability, and this is something that we have to be big on when we take back power in 2020. 2023, we have to obviously bring the national security state to heel and then start holding these people to account. I mean, I was really thrilled to see Scott Perry file impeachment charges against A.G. Garland, and I think we need to start doing the same thing with, like, an Afghan war commission on what happened with the disastrous withdrawal, really start going heavily after Secretary of Defense Austin, going after Milley. This is one of the key roles of Congress that we really have to start using to fight back against what's happening in our country.
I know that the establishment kind of has its issues with your campaign and the America First campaign, but were you excited or at least encouraged to see that Kevin McCarthy use such severe, I guess I'd use that word, language with regard to Merrick Garland and saying, you better preserve your documents and you better clear your calendar because we're coming for you? What do you think of that?
I am. I welcome it. I mean, I don't care when you had your moment where you realized that we're at war. As long as you realize we're at war, I'm behind that, and we need to unify. So I am glad to see that after Kevin McCarthy got done attempting to, you know, keep Jimmy or Butler in power out here in Washington, that he wants to defend our American way of life, and he's ready to go to war for that. So I fully support that. I'm glad to see it, and I welcome anybody into our movement who wants to be a part of that fight.
Okay. Sounding the right notes, Joe Kent, again, speaking with our good friend Ari Hoffman on his program yesterday afternoon.
Checking the pulse of politics every hour on The Commute with Carlson. It's the Social Media Sweep on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Social media from Socialists this hour on The John Carlson Show with Philip J. Go for it, Phil.
We talked about the, I guess it's a parody of the Babylon Bee or the Onion. It's more specific to news events in Seattle. The website is called, or the social media account is called The Needling, Seattle's only real fake news satire parody.
It's kind of cool. It's kind of cute. It's a little hit and miss, but sometimes
they have
well.
Something that's humorous. And so for the Seafair Blue Angels weekend, they posted on, I think it was Saturday or Sunday, that Blue Angels circle Seattle Space Needle 12 times in an attempt to find parking. And, of course, it's the obligatory picture of the Blue Angels jets in the background with the Space Needle in the foreground. And somebody I follow on social media, who's the executive director at the Economic Opportunity Institute in Seattle, and this is a liberal, it's basically a front group for labor unions like the SEIU. Her name is Summer Stinson, and Summer Stinson posted this retweet of the Blue Angels circle Seattle 12 times looking for parking. And Summer Stinson posted, they should have taken at King County Metro bus. So, you know, perfect virtue signaling for mass transit usage based on the little parody satire about the Blue Angels.
They should have taken
parking.
The bus. Plenty of room on it since no one else is taking it anymore, are they?
You know, sidle up next to a person consuming intoxicating drugs. And see if they can behave themselves for the ride across town.
It is coming up on 8:35. When we come back, is L.A. now becoming more conservative than the Seattle City Council? We'll tell you why, yes, after your 8:30 headline. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570, KVI. Two stories out of Los Angeles. One of them suggesting that the LA City Council may now be more conservative than the Seattle City Council. We'll tell you why in just a moment. First, an update to the story. I'm guessing this is probably the most viewed video of the last week, that awful traffic wreck in Los Angeles, where a Mercedes is barreling down, careening down La Brea Avenue in LA at high speeds, runs a red light, and smashes into several vehicles. The first vehicle she hit, she literally broke in half. Ignites a fiery wreck that can be seen on surveillance cameras. Six people dead. including a 23-year-old woman who was 8.5 months pregnant. Her boyfriend, who was traveling with her on their way to a prenatal visit. They also had her 11-month-old son in the car seat. The car seat was ejected from the wreck, flew through the air. That little boy died. Two other women yet to be identified in another vehicle also killed. Six other vehicles involved in the collision. Five other people injured. California Highway Patrol investigating. The person responsible is a 37-year-old nurse who had been working at Kaiser Permanente West Los Angeles Medical Center in the ICU, in intensive care. She was not killed in the wreck. She was hospitalized for over the weekend and is now in jail looking at $9 million bail. Her name is Nicole Linton. She's a traveling nurse. Nurses can get much more money traveling the country working on an as-needed basis than they can being attached to any one particular medical center. That's what she was doing. Apparently, she was not drunk or under the influence of drugs at the time. But again, you look at the video, it is absolutely horrific. This car just barreling through at 90 miles an hour through an intersection, blowing through this red light and just smashing into all these cars. It's just awful. Well, now we're learning, according to the prosecutors, that Nicole Linton, this nurse, had been involved in 13 prior automobile accidents. Not all of them were her fault. We also are learning that, according to her lawyer, Miss Linton has, quote, profound mental health problems, which should have stopped her from getting behind the wheel of a car. This is an intensive care nurse. What is someone with profound medical problems doing working in an ICU? She had held six roles in five different states in the last 2 years, despite, again, what her attorney calls a history of profound mental illness. The company that hired her, AMN Healthcare, refused to comment on what kind of background checks were performed that allowed her to get a job in the first place. She obtained her nurse's degree back in 2010. She had been a sales manager for General Motors. Apparently, there were no open complaints against her listed by California's Department of Consumer Affairs. Her California nursing license is valid. Like many nurses during COVID, she went around the country working. She's worked in North Carolina, Maryland, Atlanta, Los Angeles. She lives in Texas, Houston. Anyway, 37-year-old nurse involved in 13 previous car accidents is the person that authorities say is responsible for that awful wreck that killed six in Los Angeles. And speaking of Los Angeles, the LA City Council just passed an ordinance that bans homeless tents within 500 feet of schools and daycare centers. Remember the homeless encampment that was on school property up near Bitter Lake, North Seattle?
And Seattle had another one up on Capitol Hill. It's at Miller Playfield, and I'm trying to remember what the name of the middle school is. It's right next to it. It might be Miller Middle School. But.
That the Seattle School Board protected. The Seattle School Board didn't want the police to get rid of it. They wanted the homeless encampment.
Yeah, the one you're talking about at Bitter Lake, they had a couple of different lockdowns over security concerns related to it.
Well,
but the school district and school board just balked at doing anything.
Yeah, no, they were absolutely worthless. The school board, again, there used to be a time when school boards positions were held by community leaders, and this was a form of public service. Now they're held often by woke political activists who want to run for higher office. And, of course, they're doing whatever the most vocal and vehement activists in the community are demanding. And, of course, the teachers' unions. They're not looking out for the well-being of schools, which is why Seattle has had twice the proportion of students leaving the Seattle school district as the statewide average. Statewide average, about 3.5% drop in enrollment. Seattle is closer to 8%. Anyway, getting back to what they just did in L.A., they did what the Seattle City Council should have done 10 years ago and still hasn't done. No homeless tents within 500 feet of schools and daycares, period. But before the vote was taken, the leaders of the homeless industrial complex, homeless activists, arrested for, of course, trying to prevent the vote from even happening. Here's the anchor, KABC News, describing it.
LA City Council today approved an ordinance that would ban homeless encampments within 500 feet of schools and daycare centers. The vote came after angry protesters disrupted the meeting, forcing the council to take a recess. Police had to move in. Two people were arrested and three officers, including a sergeant, suffered minor injuries in the chaos. There was a council's third and final vote on the measure today, and people who violated the ordinance could face a citation, fines, or even a misdemeanor charge.
I am assuming that anyone who injured a police officer will be looking at assault charges and an automatic jail term? I didn't hear that. So what it should happen. Here's another news report. This one from rival station KCBS.
Why can't you give people housing? Giving people housing makes everyone safer.
Council did. It's, of course, someone wearing a mask saying, don't you see, just give homeless drug addicts free place to live. Don't you see how easy this is?
Didn't even get to hear everyone's opinion. After this woman attempted to climb over a barrier, the LAPD rushed in. While trying to get her out, others in the audience jumped in too. She got away, but one man was arrested, three officers injured, and the council room evacuated for an hour.
Jumping over a barrier and putting other people's lives at risk, that cannot be the norm around here.
I also got Ashley Babbitt killed on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. Luckily, for the activists, they have more lenient standards on how to handle people like that in Los Angeles. The ban on homeless camping within 500 feet of schools and daycare centers. Again, this is what the activists were trying to block. This was requested by L.A. school officials, who have a lot more sense, it would seem, than Seattle school officials.
The school district asked the council to take action, as it isn't hard to find tents set up near schools. This one is just a few feet from Miller Elementary. And this elementary school sits next to the 110 freeway in South L.A., where there are several encampments.
This is definitely not about solving homelessness. It never was. It's about protecting children. Our students are already traumatized with socioeconomic issues, let alone they should not be exposed to sex acts. They should not be exposed to open drug use. They should not be exposed to psychotic behavior.
In other words, keep them away from the Seattle City Council. So this is, again, just common sense. LA has a homeless problem that has been created by policies enabling and encouraging homelessness, just as Seattle does. But at least now in LA, they're doing something about it. We've been talking about San Francisco. San Francisco is getting its act together. They fired half their school board, recalled them from office. They fired their left-wing prosecutor, recalled him from office. His replacement fired 15 staffers who were more loyal to the radical policies of Chesa Boudin, who basically got elected to sabotage the rule of law and to prevent law enforcement. She revoked 30 plea bargain deals that had tentatively been offered by his office. I mean, San Francisco is actually starting on the way home. They're starting on the way back. Now L.A. appears to be doing the same thing. Another thing, by the way, in San Francisco, a law in San Francisco that actually allowed foreign nationals, including illegal aliens, to vote in municipal elections has been struck down. The six-year-old ordinance, again, which allowed illegal aliens to vote in citywide school board elections if they are the parent of a school-aged child, was struck down by Judge Richard Ulmer, who said that the ordinance is a clear-cut violation of the California Constitution, which states, quote, that a lawful voter, is a United States citizen, 18 years of age, and resident in this state. Close quote. Why did it take so long for common sense? Well, I mean, for just a coherent reading of the law. But anyway, one more example. San Francisco has his act together while we do not. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Anthony Fauci in town for a speaking appearance, was given the honor of throwing out the first pitch of the Seattle Mariners game. So how was he received?
Talk Radio 570 KVI.
We're back to John Carlson Show, KVI Seattle, and KPLZ HD3 Seattle. Again, a big thank you to our friends at RogueNation1776.com and Daniel's Delectable Broiler. Daniel's Broiler provided one of two prizes, RogueNation1776.com, the other. Great prizes, $50 gift card to the restaurant and a free limited edition KVI t-shirt of your choice. If you want to see what they look like, just go to KVI.com and click on the shop banner and you are there. Several really cool designs that are, again, created just for this station by Rogue Nation 1776. .com. Our legendary song lyric today came from Gordon Lightfoot. I can see her lying back in her satin dress in a room where you do what you don't confess. That's from, of course, Sundown. And Stan and Bothell nabbed it. And next Wednesday, you'll have a chance to win again on the John Carlson Show. All right. Tomorrow we're going to talk to Dr. Raul Garcia about monkeypox, about what we're learning and about what, for some reason, we are not being told about monkeypox. Here is what a UW physician is saying. Corwin Hake has the story.
Unlike COVID-19, which is an airborne virus, catching monkeypox requires more intentional direct contact.
Sexual contact, skin-on-skin contact, kissing.
Dr. Cherisha Donnaretti, professor of medicine at University of Washington School of Medicine, says some of the earliest reported cases were traced to raves and dance parties.
Where people were shirtless, not fully dressed, that had skin-on-skin contact with multiple individuals or sexual contact with multiple individuals.
Still, the virus is here and it is multiplying. As of Monday, Public Health Seattle and King County had reported 155 local cases, with cases doubling about every week. Dr. Donnaretti says you should get tested if you display the characteristic symptoms, fever and multiple skin lesions. There is an antiviral treatment, but availability is limited.
Because it is considered an investigational new drug, it is only available through the CDC.
There's also a two-dose vaccine out there. Supplies of that are limited too, but ramping up. Corwin Hake, Northwest News Radio.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like a herpes type virus, where if you come into direct contact with someone's lesions, then that's a way of, or sexual contact is a way of getting the virus. The good news is it so far has not been lethal, but that doesn't mean it's not awful to get. All right, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Again, another quick reminder. You've been hearing about these four Muslim men shot to death in New Mexico. The national narrative started to crank up. This could be anti-Islamic hate. Well, if it is, it's within the family hatred. Police are now identifying as the main suspect 51-year-old Mohammed Syed. Apparently, Mr. Syed's daughter married a Shiite Muslim. Mr. Syed is a Sunni Muslim, and the rivalry between Sunni and Shia Muslims is long going, very deeply rooted, very intense. And that's why when it comes to foreign policy, you want to stay away from stuff like that. But that apparently lies at the root of these multiple killings of Islamic men in Albuquerque, New Mexico. All right, to the phones we go. Here is Kevin. He's calling from Seattle's Ballard neighborhood on The Commute with Carlson. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, John. I was just, curious with everyone, blowing their heads off with wondering what's in the search warrant from the DOJ and demanding the DOJ to release it.
This is the Mar-a-Lago raid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Trump and his lawyers have that. When you're served, you're given, they could release it anytime they want.
Well,
my question would be, what's so egregious? I mean, if it was so egregious, do you not think Trump would be playing that in the news right now?
Well, it's partially sealed. So Trump's...
Well, they can release the parts they have. I mean, certainly they're privy to why they were there.
Well, I've got a better idea. I think that the Justice Department should release the warrant.
That's not a typical thing to do.
So what's wrong with doing it anyway? I mean, it sounds like you want the truth out there, don't you? Don't you want the truth out there?
Oh, sure.
Well, then why not? Then join me in calling for it to be released.
I just find it curious that the man, all full of bluster, isn't doing it himself. And then the other thing would be, for a guy that would keep saying anyone that the only people that plead the fifth are guilty people, he's sure doing it a lot.
No, he hadn't said that.
He did it in New York this morning.
No. He's never said that the only people who take the fifth are criminals.
Oh, there's record. I can find a recording of it and send it to you. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be fine because Trump invoked the Fifth several times in this. This is a separate thing. This is a state investigation into family business. But no, Kevin, if you want the truth out about this warrant at Mar-a-Lago, hey, I'm with you all the way. Well, I don't think you're with me. I want that warrant released. Let's make this fully transparent, because I've been telling you since it happened, I don't believe that the purpose of this is because of a dispute over documents, which are classified, which are not. Should you still be holding them? Should you not? You could solve that with a subpoena. Not a raid involving 30 FBI agents that took an entire day. No. They went down there using that as the predicate to seize as much personal property that they could plausibly get away with taking so that they could sift through it, fish for it, if you will, a fishing expedition to see if there's any evidence that could tie Donald Trump to criminal culpability for what happened on January 6th. This raid actually shows that the January 6th committee doesn't have it. They don't have what they need to make the case that Donald Trump was criminally responsible for what happened on January 6th. I believe Trump's behavior politically was awful that day. I don't think he committed a crime. They so want to nail him for committing a crime, they don't have it. So that's why this fishing expedition. Real quickly, sneak in Weldon here from Redmond. Weldon, we got about a minute. Go for it.
Thinking a little bit of rose-colored glasses about J. Edgar Hoover, founder of the FBI. Mm-hmm. He's the one that made the FBI political. He used agents to dig up dirt on politicians and build files. He was never a FBI agent. He was a political human being.
Yeah, yeah.
And he used those files against politicians. Even there's big speculation that the reason Johnson didn't run again is the files he had on Johnson.
I think Johnson kept files on politicians to make sure that he couldn't be fired. nobody did. That's why he held the job for, 40 or 50 years? So, but the bottom line here is I believe the FBI is politicized by one side, Weldon. It is being weaponized by the Democrats, and we're out of time here, but that has got to change. The FBI has got to restore its good name, and being associated with things like this